Well, now it's my privilege to introduce one of my good friends and a member of our Tuffy Paw committee. She's going to be our honorary 10-minute speaker tonight, Sarah B. from Visalia.
Hi, my name's Sarah, and I'm an alcoholic. So my first Soberfest was the same one that Nick was at, and I had 5 days sober, so I thought for sure I was going to get the big book, but then Nick had me beat, so he ended up getting it. I heard early on that AA is the only place where people try to out-bottom each other, and I heard that was true for the first time. Proud to say I have a little bit more time than 5 days this year around. My sobriety date is April 23rd, 2018. I could go into the drunk logs and all that, but I don't really want to spend too much time on that because it wasn't anything special. Everybody here probably has a very similar story, the typical grew up with an alcoholic parent. And then I started drinking when I was 19. I was a little bit late to the game and started off with beer every once in a while. And growing up, I always figured alcoholism was kind of like this boogeyman. I heard about it. I knew my mom had it, but I didn't think anything of it. I didn't think that I could become an alcoholic. And so started out at 19 with just a couple beers here and there. And then by the time I got sober, right after I turned 22, I was drinking every day, binge drinking, blacking out. Didn't matter if I had a good day, bad day. It didn't matter. I was drinking. It ended up with me drinking alone in my room. I didn't know anybody. Long story short, I'm from Seattle, and I moved here on purpose. And yes, I did move here on purpose. I like it very much. Thank you. And I didn't know anybody except for my in-laws at the time. And I was living in Exeter, working in a very high-stress environment. My family was states away. My ex-husband was deployed at the time, so I didn't have anybody. And so I figured, oh, well, I remember drinking was fun, so I'll just do that. And it very, very quickly spiraled out of control. I moved here in March of 2016 from North Carolina, Camp Lejeune. And then I got sober from alcohol for the first time, September 4th, 2016. And that last month or so drinking, I had spent all this time thinking, oh, I'm not an alcoholic, to, okay, maybe I am an alcoholic, maybe, to, okay, I am an alcoholic, and this is just the way it is, and I don't care, I'm not going to change, this is just how I'm going to live my life. And it's amazing how fast my morals went out the window, my ethics, my promises to my father that I would never put him through what my mother did. All of that just went out the window, and all I cared about was drinking. All I cared about was where I was going to get my next beer. Beer was my drink of choice because I thought hard alcohol made me get sick too quickly, but pretty soon the beer made me just as sick just as quickly. So fast forward a bit to Labor Day weekend 2016. I blacked out at a party, and I ended up picking up some criminal charges from that same party. Not DUI, though. I did drive drunk, but I never got caught. I should have been caught, but I didn't. One of those have yet. And so I decided, you know, I can't keep doing this anymore. It got to the point where I couldn't even eat solid food anymore. I would just wake up in the morning and be so nauseous and so sick that all I could eat were crackers until I got home at the end of the day, at the end of work, and could start drinking again. And part of it was also thinking, I don't need to eat all day because I don't want to gain weight with how much beer I'm drinking, so I'm not going to eat all day so that at night I can get drunk faster and I don't have to worry about gaining weight from drinking so much beer. That didn't work. And so luckily I knew about AA because my mother's been in and out of the program since she was 14. So I grew up going to the Alano Christmas parties, the Halloween parties, being 5, 6 years old, going to meetings with my mom because that was the only way I got to spend time with her being sober, apart from when she was in rehab. So I knew where to go. And, you know, to the newcomers, I'm really glad you're here. Whether or not you decide to stay or go see what it's like, see if it's still, you know, see what it's like out there, you're more than welcome to come back. At least you know that we're here. And we're going to be here whenever you need us. My first meeting was Breath of Fresh Air on Thursday nights. And then at that meeting, I met somebody who gave me my first big book. And I went to Christ Lutheran Church Friday night meeting right after that. And I just kind of took off running from there. I met my best friend at that meeting, because you say your sobriety date at that meeting, and we were 4 days apart. And so I saw her with her crazy blue and pink hair, and I was like, you are going to be my friend. And she still is to this day, and we actually live together now, and it's really great. And that is something, you know, being 22 and getting sober was really scary. I didn't know how I was going to live life sober, but at the same time, I wasn't being able to live it drunk either. So I was stuck in this weird limbo of how am I going to live life sober, but I can't keep living life drunk. And so I just, the first thing I heard here at Soberfest, actually, 2016, was run with the pack and just keep going to meetings, find a group of people, keep going with them, and eventually it'll click and you'll get it. And I did. I immediately started going to the Friday night meeting, the Sunday night meetings, the Rainbow Group, and I just started reading the big book, got a sponsor, started working my steps. And then I really dragged my heels about going to the young people meeting, and I don't know why now. My best friend was like trying to get me to go for months and months, and I don't think I ended up going until December, and that's when I met my current sponsor, and she's been my sponsor since March 2017. And, you know, this program has just been an absolute blessing when you can't figure out what you're going to do, because you can't keep drinking, yet you don't know anything but to drink. What do? And this program helps teach you the tools to be able to live life sober. And you don't have to get drunk because you had a good day. You don't have to get drunk because you had a bad day. You don't have to get drunk because to celebrate. You don't have to get drunk because you're sad. You can get all sorts of joy from this program without needing to drink, and you don't even realize that you're not drinking. I've been to so many young people events now, and so many events like Soberfest, where I didn't even think about drinking until the night was over, and then I realized, oh my God, I did it. I made it through the event without even thinking about alcohol. And that was huge for me, especially because, again, it's scary getting young or getting sober at any age, really. But it was hard. You know, I could have moved back to Seattle, but I chose not to because I wasn't sure if I'd be able to stay sober there. This is where my AA family is, and I'm no longer isolated. Everybody, I know almost everybody in this room, and it feels amazing. There is no better feeling. I've been kind of flying under the radar the past few months, but it still feels amazing to walk into a room and people still know your name and people still remember who you are and ask how you're doing and all of that. You know, I spent years in school with the same people and they wouldn't know me from the next Jane Doe on the street. And here I am, I go to two meetings and people just automatically remember who I am and know who I am. This program gave me a sense of responsibility, something I never really had before. I kind of just flew at my own pace. I suffered from only child syndrome, so I got whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted, on my own schedule growing up. And this program taught me to be responsible, to show up. I became secretary of Breath of Fresh Air when I had 60 days, and that saved me so much because I had to show up every Thursday and open it up. And, you know, Thanksgiving, I was there. I had to open it up. I didn't want to. I was so full of turkey, I just wanted to pass out and watch football. I couldn't because I had to be there to open up the meeting, because if I wasn't there, I was going to possibly screw up somebody else's sobriety too, because we all need each other. You know, I need this program. We all need each other. And, you know, I didn't, if one person, if I wasn't there to open it, open up the doors on that Thanksgiving night when I just wanted to sleep, somebody could have missed the boat. And I don't want anybody to miss the boat with this, because it is an incredible program. I've been to meetings now in Seattle, too, and I actually go to AA meetings with my mom when I go and visit. And she's not sober, but she goes anyway to support me, and it feels really good that we still share that connection some 18 years later. But, you know, in this program, I now have, like, my AA dad and my AA mom and, like, all these people that I can rely on and talk to. And I've lost my job in sobriety. I've gotten new jobs in sobriety. My grandma has had health issues in sobriety. My mom has had all sorts of issues in sobriety. And this program has given me the peace of mind to be able to deal with that without having to take it out on myself by getting drunk. Because by getting drunk, I was, at the end of the day, the only thing I was doing was hurting myself. My family was too far away to see what was going on. My parents have no idea how bad my drinking actually got. I think my dad still questions whether or not I was an alcoholic or if I had a kind of like beyond scared straight moment. But I'm still glad for it. I'm still glad for it. And I'm glad that, you know, I get the privilege of speaking up here at Soberfest when, you know, 2 years ago, this was like, this tri-tip and spaghetti was the first solid food I was able to eat in like 5 months. And then last year I had the privilege of speaking, doing the little H&I pitch like Patrick did tonight. And, you know, it's just incredible what this program can give you. I came into this program, no job, criminal record, just down on my luck, no husband, no dog. I lived in a trailer park with my ex-in-laws. But now today I have a really good job back in my career, back in my field of work. And despite the fact I have a criminal charge, I was able to get my notary, which is something that is huge for my field. I would have lost my job if I wasn't able to get that. But, you know, I wrote a statement about what happened and the charge and why I got it. And so they made an exception. They were like, okay, well, really all we care about is whether you disclose it or not. We don't really need all the details. But, I mean, I'd rather tell the whole truth than tell some of the truth and then have it bite me in the butt later. So they got the whole nitty-gritty. And, you know, it's just so many blessings. I'm able to fly home and spend Christmas with my family this year. This will be the first time in 4 years I will be spending Christmas with my parents. This will be the first time that I get to meet my nephew, who was born in April. My sister-in-law is due with twins any day now. She could be in labor right now for all I know. And so I'll get to meet them. And these are all things that I wouldn't be able to do if I wasn't sober, because if I wasn't sober, I wouldn't be able to hold a job. My coworkers all know I'm in the program, and we all joke about it all the time, because I'm like, trust me, you guys would know if I was drinking again, because I would only last like a day here. And it's just, had I not gotten sober, I probably would have died, because every time I tried to drink, I missed that mark. Every time I drank, I would just want to get a buzz and stay there and stay happy and stay good. And every time I drank, I missed the mark. Every time I drank, I did not remember what happened. I ended up throwing up. I ended up making phone calls that I regret, drunk Facebooking, and just making an absolute wreck of my life and everybody who came into contact with me. You know, my ex-husband was deployed, serving our country, and he had to worry about his drunk wife back home and his mother telling him the horror stories of finding me passed out in the bathroom on the floor, or me crying for her to take me to the hospital because I thought I had alcohol poisoning, then telling her, no, I'll just sleep it off, I'm fine. It was horrible, awful things, but through this program, I get to make amends. I made amends to him, working on making amends to his mom. That's really weird and awkward to make amends, your ex-mother-in-law. But I'm doing my best, and I'm doing living amends, too, just trying to be there for my family. I didn't care at all about my family when I was out here drinking. Mom's birthday, didn't call, missed it. Dad's birthday, was barely getting sober, didn't give him a call, missed it. This year was the first year I was actually able to get my stuff together in time to send him a present, sending my grandpa a Halloween card to let him know I'm thinking of him. And, again, these are all just things that I wouldn't be able to do without the program, and I think everybody should get a fair shot at this, because there is an easier, softer way. You do not have to drink yourself to death. You don't have to be dead for it to be too late, and I don't want it to be too late for anybody, and it's never too late. And people come into this program all ages, all stages, and it doesn't matter, because there's always going to be somebody there that has a similar story as you. There's always going to be somebody who has gone through what you have gone through, and we'll be able to walk you through it even when you don't think so. I mean, I got lippy with my sponsor earlier this year because I went through a breakup, and there's no way she had ever been through a breakup before. How could she know in her 8 years of infinite AA wisdom what a breakup would feel like? And but you know, that is how we are, and we have to constantly work on ourselves. And those were my character defects, because I wasn't calling her as much as I should have. I wasn't working my steps like I should have. And I look for loopholes. I'm a manipulator. I'm an alcoholic. That's what I do. That's what I've always done. The alcohol is but a symptom. And so I went back out on something other than alcohol. And I didn't think about the fact that my best friend and I are no longer going to be able to celebrate our sobriety birthdays together. I didn't think about what anybody else, I didn't think about what I was throwing away. I didn't think about all the hard work I had done to get there. I didn't think about the day in and day out I spent in meetings trying to get my life together. It didn't matter. I didn't care. And I realize now, everything happens for a reason. My higher power has everything happen for good reason. And now I know that that is because I wasn't working my program hard enough. I wasn't using the tools. This program gives you a toolbox, but you actually have to open it and use them. It doesn't just work through osmosis. You can't just put the big book under your pillow at night and expect the magic to happen. You have to actually open it. You have to actually read it. You have to call your sponsor. You know, you have to put in a little bit of work for this program. You have to put in a little bit of work to stay sober. But it's worth it because, you know, you reap what you sow. And if you start a good program in the beginning, I started my steps over when I got my sponsor. Even though I had almost 8 months and I was on step, I started it over because I needed that foundation. And, you know, it's that foundation that has still kept me here and has kept me coming back. And I, no matter how much time you have or you don't have, this program can work for you because, you know, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And I'm just so excited that I'm here and I'm sober and everybody else is here. I don't really know how I'm doing on time, but, it's amazing. You know, 2 years ago, I didn't have anything. And then here I am now, getting to be a warm-up speaker, getting the privilege of seeing all my friends in this program and family. And I wouldn't have it any other way. The work that I've done in this program has absolutely benefited every single aspect of my life. It doesn't just stop when you walk out the door of a meeting. It doesn't just stop when you hang up with your sponsor. It doesn't just stop when you stop writing your step work in your notebook. It continues when you're at work. It continues when you're eating dinner with your family, when you're at the supermarket, when you're driving. It, you know, work a good program and it will leak over into every aspect of your life and you will benefit in ways you never thought possible. So I'm, you know, again, just super grateful to be here. I'm really excited to see our speaker talk. And with that, I will keep coming back.
All right, I'm Nick. I'm an alcoholic. All right, let's give a warm Tulare County welcome to our main speaker tonight, all the way from Los Angeles, John G.
My name is John Graff, and I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Bill for inviting me up here to participate in my sobriety. I want to welcome you if you're new, and let you know that Alcoholics Anonymous works, whether you really believe in it or not, whether you've signed up for the package or not, whether you got a good attitude, a bad attitude, really doesn't matter. The actions don't care. As long as you take the actions, you'll get the same results. I'm always astounded by AA because I hear about me without me talking about me. I didn't think that I would hear, you know, about me tonight from the 10-minute speaker, some girl from Seattle, you know, she's a loophole finder. I woke up, oh, okay, yeah, now you got my attention. Because if you're somebody that does by the numbers and plays by the numbers and, you know, went to all your classes in school and did all your homework, you're an oddity to me. I'm a shortcutter. I'm a cheater. I'm a chiseler. I'm a shortcut guy. I'm a loophole finder. Yeah, I was talking with Monty. We were comparing our alcoholic car stories, you know. We both had cars that died of alcoholism, you know. But we'll drive that shit to the ground, you know, till the wheels come off, the windows fall out. We don't care, you know. Woohoo! Yeah! If you're that, hey, welcome, you know. If you're not, you could leave now and go to the candlelight meeting. Or what is it, Margaret Cho's in town or whatever, you know. I don't know. So, that's me. And that's the thing about me. Alcoholism, it doesn't really care where you come from, what you do. It's an equal opportunity ass kicker. It just, it don't care. It don't really care. You know, it doesn't care. And it's funny because I like flash back when I got here. This is like how I got sober in the Midwest. My first meeting, was at a clubhouse, and they had a business meeting, and I wanted to see what the hell was going on at that business meeting. And they had a big gathering that we weren't sending our money to them carpetbaggers in New York, you know, because they weren't going to tell us what we could do. And the big decision that night was what kind of meat we were going to have at it at the eating meeting, you know, and that was the big decision. And I was like, there's got to be something else going on here, you know. And now I see it with your chef. He's selling kilos of, you know, contraband, you know. You know, oh, I got a fat sack. Oh, excuse me, you know. Yeah, okay, yeah. I was wondering why he was the only dude with that hat. You know, like, you notice those guys, like, you know, they're out there and you're like kind of like a guy driving a car with goggles, right, Monty? You know, ain't got a window. Hey, got goggles. Let's go. Are you an alcoholic? Hell no. I need AAA, pal. You got some cables, you know? Give me a push. God. What? I mean, we're just stupid. We really are. We really are. We're like on the short bus, you know? My daughter says, I don't know why you think you're so cool, you know? You guys belong on the short bus, you know? I'm the youngest kid of four. I grew up. I'm 58 years old. I'm the baby of the family. I wasn't too wild about it when I was, you know, when I figured this stuff out. And I got this older brother. He hates me. And I don't say that to be a podium killer or anything like that, because I'm not. He just hates me. He is, he's hung me, he shot me, he stabbed me. Every Christmas was like an event, like what I was going to get from this guy. Like one year I got boxing gloves, I got my ass beat all the way to the next Christmas. You know, I got a football the other year, I got my ass pummeled till the next Christmas. Then I got firearms, and then you start really stepping and fetching around the house. And I'm like this scared dog, you know, growing up. And they're all, I hear you all tell your stories. You all tell your stories like, oh, I got out in the world and I don't belong, and everybody got a book and I ain't got the book. I don't even fit in my own family. They're all big people, big bone. I'm this little skinny kid, got this big head, got these big ears, this buck teeth. My brother used to call me Alfie Newman. And the one that really did me in was he said that I wasn't a graph. He said, I'm from the Midwest, I'm from Missouri. And much like, you know, Visalia. What? I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm saying I can relate. Pay attention. Come on. She told me I wasn't a graph. We went to the dump one day, and Mom saw you sitting outside the dump, and she felt sorry for you, so she picked you up and brought you home. Now, I don't know how your head works at about 5. I haven't had a drink yet. But I go to my mom in tears. I'm like, Jeff says, I'm out of graph. You found me at the dump. You felt sorry for me. You brought me home. Now, if love could have fixed me, love would have fixed me that day. And it would have fixed me that day like this. My mom was like, Johnny, that is not true. You were planned. You were named after your uncle. You're named after your grandfather. You were this. You were that. She did what a mother should do, right? She did what a mother should do. So if love was going to fix me, love would have fixed me that day. Now, to let you know that I have alcoholism and not alcoholism, and that there's a part in that book that talks about that the problem centers in our mind. Now, I've never had to go to anybody and say, well, what do they mean by that? Because I've always been off. And as my story goes on, you'll figure that out. But I know that my mom is lying. There's no way somebody could love me that much. And it's so true to this day. I started me and my business partner started a little construction business a few years back. And we had a job going sideways. And I was at the kitchen table. And I'm sitting with these plans. And I'm going over these plans. I'm going over these plans because I know I'm going to figure it out. And I'm sitting there and I'm driving myself nuts. And we have my daughter's dog. My daughter got deployed, and we got this old pound puppy that she's got. He's just a big old lover. And he would come up to me, and he would put his head on my leg like this. And I'm like, come on, dude, leave me alone, you know? And I'd shoo him away. And about 2 minutes later, he'd come back, and I'm like, come on, dude, leave me alone, you know? About the third or fourth time, my wife is laying on the couch watching this. This ain't long ago. This is only like a couple years ago. And she said, what is so broken in you that you can't figure that something loves you so much and knows that you're upset that it's coming to comfort you? And I was like, shut up. Leave me alone. What is wrong with you? Love. What are you talking about? Now, I've been here for a minute. All right, come here, you know, let's hug it out, you know. I went to 12 flat years of Catholic schooling. Settle down. And I had ample opportunity. I mean, I had good nuns, brothers, priests, you know, just try to educate me. And I'm a class clown. I got a mouth. It doesn't really matter. Negative, positive attention. Look at me. I show up first day, first grade. I'm sitting there. The nun's trying to conduct business. I'm in there clowning around. The nun looks at me and says, somebody in here is acting like a monkey. And I look at the nun without missing a beat. And I said, somebody in here looks like a monkey. And boom, I'm 86 out of first grade. I didn't make it to nap time. I didn't make it to recess. I didn't even get my seat assignment, you know. And I'm 86 out of first grade because I called the nun a monkey, you know.
And evidently this is a gift, because you can't really teach this. You've either got it or you don't. And if you're laughing at it, you must have it. And it's never served me well. You know, 10 years later, I'm in the bar, me and my new best friend buying drinks for one another, and, you know, somewhere about the third or fourth drink, I look at the guy and I say, "You don't sweat much for a fat guy, do you?" Boom, I'm on the ground, you know. And my wife says I'm broken. My mom says I have no couth. I don't know what either one of those mean. And evidently I've passed this on to my kids, because about 5 years ago, I was packing my little son's lunch and getting him ready to go to preschool. We're sending him to this little educated or religious preschool, and so he could, you know, learn his stuff. And I'm in there and I'm pouring his drink into a canteen. He walks into the kitchen. He says, "What are you doing, Dad?" And I says, "I'm pouring your drink in this canteen." He says, "What are you pouring in there, wine?" I said, "Wine? This kid's, he's 5 years old. He was born in a sober home. He ain't, you know, he ain't never seen nobody drunk." I'm like, "Wine? Who the hell's telling you about wine?" He says, "The teacher." I said, "What teacher at this school that I'm paying good money for is telling you about wine?" He goes, "The big fat one." And I just started laughing. His mom came in there. She says, "You can't condone that kind of behavior. What's the matter with you?" Next thing I know, we're both in timeout. And I'm looking at him saying, "It's all your fault, dude." He says, "You can't say it to her face. You get in trouble." This is the same kid now, 5 years later. I was going to speak, and we got stuck. Like, we got stuck, you know, I got to leave here tonight and drive home so I can, you know, be dad. And, but about, I don't know, about a month ago, I was going to speak somewhere, and I'm on the phone. Like I said, we started this little business, and I'm yelling at one of my workers on the phone, and he's in the truck. We're driving to go and speak. I get off the phone, I throw the phone down on the seat. I'm fuming, because I've told this guy, and he goes, "Hey, Dad, let me ask you a question." "It's a bad deal, I can already tell." I said, "What?" He said, "Does it ever really work to yell?" And then he threw in the zinger. He goes, "Tell the truth." His mom started that little gem on us. And I'm like, "Look, so I'm trying to explain to a 10-year-old now why I'm yelling at Jerry over the phone that I tried to talk to, you know." And he's like, "Tell the truth, Dad. Does it ever really work to yell? You mind if I start calling you once a day, kid, just to check in and run things by you, you know? I mean..." Kid's got more on the ball than I do, you know? Anyway, my mom and dad were on again, off again. Not that it makes any difference. I mean, it didn't, you know. But when my dad was around, I was deathly scared of my old man. My old man played no, you know, my old man was his way or the highway. That was it. And he would drop you like a bad habit. And I was deathly afraid of my old man. But when I was about 10, he took off, and it was on for me. And I got in trouble and been through the system. And by the time I was a junior in high school, I was just done. By the time I had reached high school, I was full blown. I was putting something into my system, whatever it was, I was putting it into my system, because I was just checking out. So my junior year, I get expelled out of the school. Now, I'm from a town, there's only two schools in this whole town. There's us, and there's them. And I can't go to them, because I'm one of us. And my mom goes in and pleads my case and lets them, you know, begs them to put me back into school for my senior year. So I'm in senior year and I'm locked down. I mean, I'm physically locked down. I ain't got no study halls. I got, you know, correspondence courses. I got to go after school. I got to go on the weekends. I got to do all this crap to get through that year of school. So what happened was I come to the end of that year and they contacted my mom and they said, he's a quarter credit shy from graduating. He ain't going to graduate. My mom leaves the principal's office in tears. My sister goes in to plead my case. My sister, as she's leaving the principal's office, says, well, I guess he's going to have to come back a whole nother year for that quarter credit. And the principal goes, you know what? I found that quarter credit. My hand to God, that's how I got out of high school. It just didn't weigh out, you know? And by this time, I'm a thief. I love stealing. I don't make any bones about it. I love stealing your car and seeing your face as I steal your car. And I just loved it. I mean, it was just like that excitement, that adrenaline. I just love that excitement. And as my friend Frank Jones used to say, if I would go into a store with the money to buy what I was after, and I walked out of that store and I had the money and the product in my hand, I was a double winner. And that's the way I was. What happened was we got busted for running this little chop shop business that we were doing and dealing with. And my friend goes down and I know I'm going next. So I grab a girlfriend and another friend and we flee to the state of Texas. And me and the friend get in a fight and he moves out and the girlfriend gets pregnant. And what happens was I'm much like Bill talks about in his story. When he went to Europe, he had arrived. And I had arrived when I hit Corpus Christi, Texas. Because what happened was I had this liquor store that was giving me a running tab in it. Across the street was the cantina that I was drinking in that was giving me a running tab in it. And down the street was a pipe yard that I had managed to hustle up a job out of. And I'm doing what I do best, and that's stealing deal. And I'm sitting there that night in the cantina, playing the jukebox, running the pool table, and I'm excited that I'm going to have this kid. I'm ecstatic that I'm going to have this kid. And I'm buying pictures around, and I'm going to town. And I got gripped with this thing, and I couldn't describe it until after I did this inventory in AA. And the things that I'm running on at this point in time in my life is I'm running on this false pride that I can't tell you that I don't know how to take care of a kid. I don't know how to pay bills. I don't know how to do this stuff. I can't tell you that because you're not going to think anything positive. You're going to think I'm weak, I'm a chump, I'm this, I'm that. It's not going to be anything like, oh, here, let me show you how to do this. That's what's in my head. And my head is always wrong, and it's always out to kill me. And the other thing is, I'm running on this self-centered fear. Like, it ain't going to work. It ain't going to happen. I can't figure this out. And not like the fear that I'm sitting in a corner sucking my thumb. I'm the guy that's out there doing crazy, outlandish crap to show you that I'm not afraid. But I'm dying inside. I'm dying inside to show you that you don't figure out that I'm afraid. This old man started to run the pool table. And I ended up rolling this old man out of his Social Security checks, pension check. I don't know what it was. But I ended up rolling this old man out of his money. Put the girlfriend on a bus and sent her home to mom. And I joined the military. And as a result of my military career, which lasted 11 months and 3 days, I can never step foot on a military installation the rest of my adult life. And that plays an important part later on in this story, so we'll see if you're paying attention. This table isn't, but we'll see if the rest of you are, okay? And the people whose faces are lit up with their TV screens, you know, or their telephone screens. I only drove 180 miles to be here, so excuse me that you got a 20-minute drive across town. Sorry. I don't mean to offend anybody. And then I wonder why people don't like me, you know? I really did. I'm like, asshole.
He's an asshole.
I got Monty. I don't care. Anyway, that little girl I was so ecstatic about in a 5-minute drunken phone call, I dismissed her out of my life. That brother that hated me, I called him up when I got that discharge. I said, I can't break Mom's heart one more time. You're going to have to tell her. And I kind of dropped off the radar. I hooked up with a lady that already had 2 boys born to her. I'm up in Northern California. And I do what I do best, you know. I do what I do best. And after almost getting this family killed over a stolen motorcycle, I thought, I'll go out and I'll get a square job. And through a series of breaks and some luck, I ended up at the top of a Teamster's pay scale. And I'm still getting things shut off. I'm still getting things repossessed. I'm still getting those funny locks on the door. I'm a midnight mover. I don't know if there's any midnight. This table's a midnight mover. I can tell you that right now. They're moving tonight. I don't know what they are. I could take a 4-bedroom house and I could move it in a couple hours. Now, it might not be in the same shape it left, but it's going to be where it's going in a couple of hours. All I need is a pickup truck. And really, if you give me a hatchback, I'll slam it in that, you know, and strap it to the top, bungee cord it down. Yeehaw! What a gem. What a gem. My kids, by this time, I got these 2 boys and they started to drink and use. So I'm a scumbag at best. I start sending them to school to sell dope for me. I'm ripping them off. They're ripping me off. We're one big happy family. And I'm over at this buddy of mine's house. He got hurt. And he's over there and he gets up on his crutches. He goes out to the mailbox. He comes back with this check. I said, what the hell is that? He says, well, I got hurt at work. They send me this check every 2 weeks. I said, that's a good idea. So I went to work that night and I got hurt. And this is my house. This is how I'm living. I've kind of got a sundry of vehicles kind of semi-circled around the property. You'll see a 64 Chevy truck with the front clip gone. You'll see a 64 Buick up on blocks with the ass end ripped out of it. You'll see a motor hanging from the tree somewhere on that property. The grass is about this tall. And there's a junkyard dog chained to something out there running a clear path through the grass. And I'm a dealer. I don't know about you all, but I always got a deal. Doesn't matter really what the deal is. Could have, you know, I'm always in for the deal. Could have 2 cockroaches racing. I'm in for the deal. I love that deal. I gotta have that deal. We're gonna buy this. We're gonna cut it here. We're gonna sell it there. We're going to Reno. Yeah. We got a system this time. This time, we don't need no room. We don't need a room. We're gonna hit it big. We're gonna be in the penthouse, you know. 3 o'clock in the morning, we're siphoning gas out of some lucky RV, you know. Shut up, dude. Come on, you know. Put the cigarette out. That's always exciting. Thank you. I don't know how many landlords I've left standing on my doorstep. Dude, I'm going right down to the local Chinese market. I'm going to cash my check. See, here's the check. I'll be back. Be back. 3 days later, I come back. I ain't got the rent money. I ain't got the kids' lunch money. I ain't got no money. I need a pack of cigarettes at that time, you know. And I did this time and time and time again. I've moved from the city to the country, to deeper in the country, to back in the city. To the end of my drinking, my oldest boy busted his ass and made it onto what they called then was the Babe Ruth baseball team. And I'm the drunken dad that's in the... I get kicked out, but you ain't kicking me out. I'm taking my lawn chair and my cooler, and I'm going out in right field at the fence, and I'm gonna scream crap from right field, you know, because you ain't gonna kick me out. And the kid was so heartbroken and so embarrassed he couldn't even get up off the bench. He couldn't even get up off the bench. And last year I'd helped my 10-year-old son. I was the assistant coach, you know, and I'm like, man, where does that, you know, you don't hear that crap from the PTA. I mean, you don't hear that stuff around the Kiwanis Club, you know. You don't hear that transformation. You don't hear that miracles from that, you know. You hear it here if you stay here and you pay attention. You hear it here. So... the end of my drinking, I'm 110 pounds, I'm yellowish green, I got open sores all over my body, and I'm increasingly more violent, I'm increasingly just crazier and crazier, and I end up walking out of that family. I threw some things in a little black bag and I walk out. And I go and I sit down on this crossroads and I said, what the hell am I going to do? And something said, go to the right. And I'm not going to try to explain it. I'm not going to try to define it. Straight ahead was the park, and there was always something going on there. To the left was Shovelhead's house, and there was always something going on there. Behind me was my own house, and it should have had a revolving door as many times as we've been through this dance of death. I've been doing this stuff with her for 8 years. I picked up that bag and went to the right. I ended up at this truck stop that I used to do business out of, and they ain't having nothing to do with my yellowish green butt. And I do what all guys of my caliber do. About 2 in the morning, I call Mom Collect just to check in, see what she's doing. And I'm sleeping, you know. And my brother, that brother that hates me, had screwed it up for me by getting sober in something called A&A. And he had even worsened my drinking by dragging our mother to that hideous thing called Al-Anon. For the first time in her life, because I could always work my mom. I was the baby. I could work her. And for the first time, I remember talking to her, and she said, you know what, Johnny? She said, I'll send you that ticket. She said, but I'm not going to bail you out of jail. I'm not going to come put money on the books for you. I'm not going to pay your lawyers. I'm not going to allow you to wreck my car. I'm not going to allow you to ruin my life anymore, Johnny. And I just think about that. You know, I think about dropping my kid off at school. I have the luxury of driving my son to school every morning, and he says his little prayers because it's kind of, you know, I had this fear grip me about everything nowadays. Dropping your kid off at school, it's like, you know, dropping him off at Target practice in some of these places. And say our prayers as we go there, and it rips my heart out when I drop that kid off and he gets out and he says, hey, I love you, Dad. I'm like, I love you too, dude. You know, have a good day. Do your job. And he comes back after he gets his stuff out of the back of the truck and comes up and waves at me again, you know. And it's just, I think about that, what my mom had to go through by my hand, not by her, telling me that. I have to think about how much that must have ripped her heart out. I ended up flying in, and I said, why don't you bring Jeff with you? And my brother was in his evangelical stage of sobriety, and so he picked me up from the airport and with my mom, and we're shooting down I-70, and he proceeds to tell me where I'm going to go and what I'm going to do and what I'm going to do once I get there and how much fun I'm going to have once I get there. And so he takes a breath. So I proceed to tell him where he could go and where he could put it and how much fun he was going to have once he put it there. And next thing I know, Captain Serenity's pulling the car over on I-70 and we're going to go to Fifth City. And I'm in town maybe 5 minutes. 5 minutes. Our little fat blue-haired mother's sitting in the back with the rosary beads smoking. And she says, "You know what, Johnny? Why don't you go talk to these people? And if you ain't got a problem, you ain't got to do nothing about it." Now, I know there's one loophole finder in here tonight. I don't know if there's any more of you. Well, there's a couple over there. But I figured, you know, I'm gonna lie like a rug. I'm gonna lie like a rug. I went the next morning and I took that 20 questions and I lied like a rug. And, you know, here I am in Visalia tonight. And but what happened for me is, if you're new here, is Alcoholics Anonymous started to work for me without me believing. I didn't want it. I did not want this. And I can't express that enough. It's not like I'm trying to sound like, my brother, my Eskimo, who is in a hospital bed dying as I speak, I can remember his face. He looked at me as if everybody else in my lifetime, that when I went to him and said, "I resent Alcoholics Anonymous." And he was like, "How the hell can you resent the thing that's building your life up?" And I said, "How the hell can you not? We've been taught this crap our whole life. Like, this is not new to me, dude. I showed up at 26 years old, shot out, and everything I stood for, I was wrong in, and everything they tried to teach me as a kid was right. Who wants to sign up for that, you know? And oh, wait a minute. I'm a good thief. People don't know that I stole from them. And then you want me to go back to those people and tell them, hey, I'm the one that stole from you so I can have another day of sobriety. Oh, yeah, I can see how this is going to work. Yeah. I remember when I went to make amends to my mom that I took, here, hand to God here. I went to my mom. She had all these antique coins she'd been collecting, grandma had been collecting. I'm the one that's cashing them in. I'm the one stealing them. I went to her and I told her, I said, "Hey, you know, I'm at the amends step. I got to make right with you. I'm the one that stole all those coins." She looked at me. She was like, "Johnny, I've been blaming your brother for 20 years for that." I called up my sponsor. "Oh, yeah, this shit's really working now, pal. Yeah. I just broke her heart again." I ended up, I sat in these meetings and I started to get identification. And to me, that's the best thing that I could find out here. It happened for me in a sober living house, a halfway house, in that stupid thing called group. It's always the things that I hate the most that always, like, help me. And I had that moment of identification because I can always put stuff off. I can always make excuses. I could always have a comeback. I could always, "Yeah, but." I could always, but then one day in that group that this guy starts talking and what he's talking about, I couldn't deny. I had done the exact same thing 2,000 miles away, and it was that moment of identification. And as my sponsor said, there's no greater tool than that. That when somebody said tonight, you know, when one alcoholic is talking to another alcoholic, that they make those feelings of difference go away. That you can walk across that bridge of identification and say, yeah, I know what you mean. I know how that feels. Yeah, I've done that. I don't know any greater tool than that. Because what, to this day, I've been here for a minute. When I'm in it, and somebody's talking about the solution and how they got through something, that's what I want to know. How did you get through that without picking up a drink? You know, how did you get through that without blowing your brains out? Because I gave this thing, I've had three sponsors my whole sobriety. My first one started eating pellets so he didn't feel bad until he blew his brains out. I guess they made him feel bad. And my second sponsor stopped going to AA. And I've had my third sponsor for 27 years. And all three of these men have taken time out of their life to help me, not with the same situation, because you'll find out later in this principle, in this story, that where all three of them had given me the same direction without having this situation in their life. So if you're new and you're sitting in here tonight and you're trying to figure out, oh, I need my homie. Oh, I need the guy that I relate to. Don't do that. Don't do that at all. Don't try to figure it out. Get Monty, you know, get Bill, you know. Get somebody other than yourself. Because if you are running your own life, you got an idiot running your life. I can just tell you that. I've done it. I got the t-shirt for doing it, okay? But I did everything that AA told me. And at 3 years sober, I wanted to eat a bullet. And that's how I got my present sponsor. And that man took what I thought I knew of Alcoholics Anonymous and turned it upside down. And my day this morning, it started out, I was supposed to be taking my son to Little League Baseball. Saturdays are baseball, okay? I was supposed to be taking him to baseball at 6:45, game's canceled because it's raining cats and dogs down in L.A. Then I go to a job that they woke me up at 5 o'clock in the morning over because something's going sideways. And I stay there until 10 o'clock. Then I was going to come home, jump on my bike, and scoot on up here. Nothing worked out. Nothing. Not a damn thing. So if you're new and you're sitting here, oh, she ain't looking at me. Oh, they're snubbing me. Oh, bite me, okay? Okay? Just bite me. It doesn't work out. But here's the thing. AA will take that stuff so you don't have to drink. So you don't have to use. If you put these principles in your life and do it somebody else's way. I've done shit around here that makes no sense whatsoever with the problem that I have. None. And I can't believe my life. I sit in my backyard. I got a concrete pond, as Jethro Bodine used to call it, on a Beverly Hills. I got a pool in my backyard. And it's in the ground. It's not one of them things that you blow up, you know. It's not one of those. It's like a legit pool. And I don't tell you that to brag about it. I can't believe this shit myself. I can't. I'm like, whose house is this? Like, really? Oh, it's time to pay the mortgage. Okay, yeah, I know now. Now it's my house. Yeah. But I'm not somebody that... I got a truck out there with our company name and insurance and tags that came in the mail to my address. Not something that I took with a razor and peeled off of your car and slapped on my car. Or better yet, sat up with a brush and paint and tweaked out painting it the right color. Oh yeah, the people that are laughing have done that crap. Hey, you too? Hey, welcome. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Some dude's back there, he just choked on his Copenhagen. It's okay, homie. It's okay. I came out here When my sponsor turned 35, I had 5 years sober at the time. I was sitting at Ohio Street on a Tuesday night. It was a coffee break. I was smoking at that time. They have this stupid painting behind the podium. It's the Lord's Prayer at the end of a pier. And I had the thought and the feeling come over me that anything was possible here. Anything was possible here. And I was 5 years sober when that happened. Hadn't had it before. I hadn't had it since. I told my wife at the time, I said, with or without you, I'm going back. The sponsor made me meet some requirements, take care of some things. Basically, we sold everything we owned back in the Midwest, loaded up 2 4x8 trailers, drove out here to be part of Pacific Group. Because AA ain't the same everywhere. And I'm sure you know that. What you have here is a special little deal. Whatever little chicken shit resentments or dishonest or whatever, nurture it. Pray for each other. Whatever. Keep this growing. I'm telling you, it's special. It's special. Join in. You'll feel a part of. So I came out here, and I'd love to sit here and tell you that every day that I've been out here, you know, I walk on the sunny side of the street and I have little birds land on my shoulder in the morning and whisper scripture in my ear and every meal I've eaten was a banquet, but I felt like I was in jail tonight with the plastic silverware. Finally, I just picked the shit up with my fingers and started eating. I was like, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah, all right, homie, yeah. Buy some Chinette or some shit. Like, not the jailhouse shit. Come on. I'll give you $50. I mean, damn. Shit's folding up. I grew up on government cheese and bologna, and that shit was better than that, okay? I'm telling you. Damn. I've probably done everything wrong. I've probably offended some of you tonight. I'm sorry. If I need to make amends to you, let me know. I've always offended. My mom always says, Johnny, you can piss off the Pope. And I ended up, I've done everything wrong. Everything wrong except for this. I don't make excuses. I don't run from it. I don't drink. And I have one man that knows everything about me. There's no secret. There's nothing unturned. There's nothing that man doesn't know. And I really don't care. You know, I ran around out there on the streets and trying to impress people I didn't even like. And I finally have gotten to a point in my life to where you're either going to like me or you ain't. And I really just don't give a rat's ass. You know, I really don't. I really don't. I don't mean to offend anybody or to, but I can't run around trying to be Mr. AA to everybody because I'm the one that picks up the tab. And then my loved ones pick up the tab because they're the ones closest. I went through a divorce a few years ago. Well, it's been about 15 years now, probably a little longer. And I was running around and I was everything to everybody in AA, but I wasn't a part of this little girl's life, this little 10-year-old girl. And we had to put her mom away for a little bit, and me and her were thrusted together, so I had to learn how to be a father and how to be her dad. And I don't know how to be a dad. I don't know how to do this. Anyway, we started this tradition to where every Thursday was date night. And we learned this whole little thing of communication. And this little girl, I've always called her my second chance because I lost that other girl when I was drinking. And this little girl has kind of restored that into me. And we go through this thing. And during this deal, the thing didn't work out with me and her mom. And we ended up splitting up and going through this hideous divorce. And, And during the divorce proceedings, I started to date. You know, like the group didn't have enough to talk about, so okay, let's start dating, you know. And this little girl grew up in the midst of all of this crap. And what happened by the time of this relationship that I was dating with this lady, we had the typical AA romance. I love you, I hate you, you hang up, you hang up, no, you hang up, well, you're, you know. And what happened was, I can remember proposing to her 10 years ago, no, 12 years ago on Christmas. But I said, look, I got conditions. I don't want any more kids. I'm old. I don't want any kids. She goes, I ain't got none. Don't want none. I'm like, you're my girl, you know. What happened was we had this honeymoon. We went away. We come back. She's not feeling well. She's at the doctor. She's crying. I'm pissed. She says, what are we going to do? And about this time, this lady come walking by with this little toe-headed baby in a stroller. And I'm like, crap. You know, 9 months later, this little midget was born. I called him Buckethead because he had a 16.5-inch head. He was 22.5 inches tall. He weighed 10 pounds. He was like a midget. It's like that old joke, you know, he came out and slapped the doctor, you know, and she started this tradition of rocking him to sleep because he wouldn't go to sleep. So I'd put that old big old bucket head in my chest and I'd start melting, man. I'd start melting. And that's the little kid that tells me, you know, every morning that I take him to school, you know, love you, Dad. That's the little kid that I'm watching get up there and face his fears and go through it and kick ass playing baseball. And he's not embarrassed. And I'm not embarrassing him. And he doesn't know about me. He doesn't know about that animal. That little girl grew up she's now a Navy pilot. I'm pleased as punch and I'm scared to death. I'll show you pictures and say prayers in the process, you know. About 6 months ago now, 8 months ago now, she contacted us. She was deployed when she took, you know, gave us her dog and all of that. And she was deployed and she contacted us. She said, hey, you know, we have this thing called a Tiger Cruise. You can meet us in Hawaii. I want Jack to meet us in Hawaii and then take the ship back to, you know. And I'm like biting my lip like, okay, yeah, you know. And I'm waiting, you know. Yeah, me and Jack, it'll be fun for us, you know. And I'm like, all right, yeah, sure, okay. Yeah, be our honor. We'll send him right over, you know. Get off the phone. I'm thinking, well, what the hell about Dad, you know? What about me, you know? I want to be on a ship, you know. I want to climb around shit and see what, you know, I can get in trouble with. So about 3 weeks later, she calls me back and she says, hey, you don't want to come, do you? I was like, hell yeah, I want to come. Yeah, you know. So she's like, okay, I'll send you all these documents. You got to fill them all out. Yeah, you're getting ahead of yourself, huh? So I forged all those documents with my hand to God. And I sent them back. They're in my truck. I'll show them to you. Stamped. And I got on the USS Nimitz, the oldest carrier in the fleet. Me and my boy. And it was 9 days of me going back on that ship. And I was in hog heaven, man. I was like, should have done your homework, pal. You know, I'm like, doo-doo-doo. Nothing wrong here. Yeah. Just don't check my DD-214, you know. Time. time of my life, man. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I could not believe it. May 24, 2016, that same girl called me. She said, "Hey, are you sitting down?" And I said, "Yeah, what's up?" And she says, "I just got off the phone with Jessica." And I said, "Jessica who?" She goes, "Your other daughter." Now, here's the thing. This is the best part of the story. All the other crap you could throw out the window, because this is the best part of the whole story. I've had three different sponsors. When I got into these steps and I got into this amends, I wanted to go back into that little girl's life. And I wanted to go back and say, "Hey, here's Dad. I love you. Sorry I've screwed things up, but I'm here to make it right with you now." And all three sponsors, not having the same experience, put the AA principles to work in my life. And they put them to work in my life, not with them happening in their own life. So if you're new and you're sitting there and you're saying, "Oh, that's a power trip," or "You're this," or "You're that," it ain't nothing. We just been through the minefield. All we're trying to do is direct you through the minefield without blowing your ass off. That's all we're trying to do here. We're trying to build a life for you to have something. You know, so that you could tell a story like that and it rips somebody's heart out. Because I used to sit there and I'd hear these stories and it would just piss me off because I knew it was never going to happen for me. I knew it was never going to happen for me. 5/24/16, that daughter that I raised, that's the Navy pilot, did this thing called Ancestry.com. That daughter that I didn't raise, that all three sponsors told me the same story, said, "She's probably been adopted. She probably doesn't know a thing about you. She's probably been loved and cared for, and you're going to go in and screw it all up." She did Ancestry.com. Now they put them together. Then what happened was, now she knows how to spell my name. So then she gets on that stupid thing called Facebook, which I think is complete poison for alcoholics. It's like, "Oh, let me do another picture of myself. Oh, here's what I'm eating. Get a life. Really?" Like, I got a guy calls me up. "I'm in trouble at work." "What are you in trouble for?" "Well, I'm on Facebook too much." "Well, go to work. You're at work." So now she knows how to spell my name. So she sends out five messages. She sends out one to my brother. She sends out one to my wife. She sends one out to my daughter. And she sends two out to my nieces. Now, to let you know and kind of knock the wind out of your sails and think that you got it going on, this was what the message said. And I try to remember this every day. The message read, "You probably don't know anything about me. Probably a really dark secret. Don't want any drama. I'm highly successful. Have a daughter of my own. Married for years. Don't want any money. Don't want any drama. I just want some information about my dad." Now, if that don't make you feel like a shithead, I don't know what will. But that was my solution. That was my situation. 5/24/16, I got to talk to that daughter for the first time in 36 years. And I got to make amends to that girl and tell her, "I loved you so much. I missed you so much." My daughter sent back a message. She says, "You're not a secret. I've known about you my whole life. It drives him nuts on Christmas. It drives him nuts on his birthday. He knows all about you. He's told me all about you. He's had direction not to contact you and ruin your life." I didn't have to do a thing. Didn't have to do a thing. That's the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the power of a God in my life. That's the power of a sponsor that cares more about my sobriety than my feelings. That's letting the process happen. That Father's Day was the first Father's Day that I got to spend with that daughter my granddaughter and the jackass she married. He is a jackass. That Christmas was the first Christmas that I got to spend 2 weeks with them and spoil them beyond belief. That she had some timeshare down in the valley that for the company she works for in the Palm Desert, that we got to stay down at this timeshare by her boss. And then we came up to L.A. and did the whole thing there. This last Christmas, I got to take her to Hawaii, her and my granddaughter to Hawaii. Now, just to let you know how stuff has changed, like I wanted to drown my granddaughter in the Pacific Ocean because she was being a 13-year-old girl. But, you know, progress, not perfection, you know. And because her mother is Hawaiian and she's never been to Hawaii. So I got to take her to Hawaii and then she got to meet her relatives in Hawaii. Two more weeks, that little Navy air commander's getting married, and that daughter and that granddaughter are going to be out here, and I'm going to be part of that whole thing. And I can't believe it. I cannot believe it. And my goddamn phone is going off out of all of this. I can't believe it. Excuse me, I thought I had turned it off. I apologize. I hate that. Can't really fault you for your phone now, can I? Go ahead, check your Facebook account. Hey! Asshole. See, that's what I'm talking about. See? See what I say? Like, you got it going on. Like, you got to go, and then quack, quack, quack. I could have played it off. I could have blamed this guy. He doesn't know, you know. If you're new here tonight, the best thing I can tell you is this. I hope you can surrender to the fact that you don't know what's good for you. You're sitting here on a Saturday night. There's a lot better things out there. Really is. But then again, no, it ain't. Not for me. I don't know why people leave this. I really don't. I really don't know why people leave this. I am constantly entertained. Constantly entertained. I mean, you think about it. You think about it. About all the crap you've seen, you know, just here tonight. You know, it's like... You think about it. I'm constantly entertained around here. If you're new here tonight, the best thing I can tell you is this. There's a part in that book, and it's called There Is a Solution. And it simply states this. There is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, or the confession of our shortcomings. Which is basically what I've done here tonight. But we've become convinced in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. I don't know about you, but I am convinced of the hopelessness and futility of my life as I was living it a month ago. Of the resentments, of the dishonesty, of the selfishness, of the self-centeredness, of that fear. Those four same things that want to come out and ruin my life on a regular basis. That when I'm not practicing these principles in all my affairs, that those things creep into my life and want to take me out. Because it doesn't matter how long you've been here. It doesn't matter how long you've not been here or been here. I got a nephew that was coming here to get sober. Couldn't do what his Uncle Johnny and his dad was doing and ate a bullet. I had a guy that slept on the same couch right across the room from me for 20 years. Ended up keeping secrets around here and ended up hanging himself in an orchard. Because he couldn't let go of those secrets. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't. What matters is what you do. What you do. And it doesn't matter how you do it. just as long as you do it. Now, as my wife says, John, it doesn't hurt you to be nice. It doesn't cost anything extra to be nice. And I'm still learning that. So, but if you're new here tonight, I hope you can surrender to the fact of doing it somebody else's way and to give up and give it a try with us. Thanks.